I'm Stephanie Overbuck.
I'm Mel Wymore.
And this is Pot of Gold.
This week, we're talking about fashion. In a growth-oriented extraction economy, we see a lot of waste. Wasted food, wasted energy, and yes, wasted textiles. In fact, about $120 billion worth of fashion fabrics are completely wasted every year. Now, Stephanie Benedetto wants to put that waste to use.
Stephanie Benedetto is the founder of Queen of Raw, a marketplace to buy and sell sustainable and deadstock fabrics and textiles. By cataloging and repurposing these fabrics that would otherwise go to landfill, Stephanie is creating a model of integrity and sustainability in the supply chain for the fashion industry and beyond. Here is Stephanie.
Hi, everyone. My name is Stephanie Benedetto, and I'm the Queen of Raw. I come from a family background of actually over 100 years in fashion, textiles, and raw materials. So I very much grew up around this industry. I loved how powerful it was to kind of connect the dots with players all over the world. But I always disliked kind of all the waste it produced and just believed there had to be a better way, better for people, better for planet, but also better for a business's profit. And grew up hearing the old school ways of doing business. And my great grandfather, he came over on a ship in 1896 and he landed at Ellis Island and he settled into the Lower East Side of New York. And as an immigrant chasing the American dream, he had to make a living for his family. And so he would find materials and supplies nearby, old fabrics and furs and things people had brought over on the ships with them, but they weren't using anymore. And he would repurpose them by hand with minimal waste and minimal toxins, right? Because his bottom dollar depended on it. He sold to local customers. And it was a really profitable, successful business model. Now, of course, he didn't talk about it as sustainability. At the end of the day, that's what it was. And so my vision, my goal, and what we're doing at Queen of Raw is just how can we use technology to get back to the way my great-grandfather did business? And I'm doing it for my children.
So when you talk about sustainability, how does it work for you? What kind of waste are we talking about in the fabrics industry or textiles?
When you look at the fabric industry, we've all known that there's all this unused inventory with finished goods, right? I mean, you think of massive businesses like ThredUp and Poshmark and Depop and The RealReal, all built around reselling all this unused, all these finished goods waste. But when we looked at up the chain, we realized that there's also all of this unused fabric, pre-consumer stuff, just sitting there in warehouses collecting dust, are going to be burned or sent to landfill. And nobody seemed to be paying attention to the problem up the chain. So for us, we actually dove deeper and quantified it. It's up to the tune of $120 billion a year of unused fashion fabrics that sits in warehouses, collecting dust or gets burned or sent to landfill. And this stuff can eat up to 15% of a business's bottom line. And so the waste problem, the unused inventory from raw materials to finished goods, it is massively damaging to people and planet, but it is massively damaging to a business's profit. And obviously with everything going on in the world right now, I think that has only brought to light even more than ever before these issues. We're in a crisis of supply, right? More unused inventory than ever before. And so I think that has been an opportunity for our business, for lack of a better word, to come in and help these businesses do better going forward.
Wow, that's a lofty goal. And you said using technology or leveraging technology to have this happen. How do you go about doing that?
So when I looked at the problem of waste, I wanted to understand not just how we could sell the waste in a marketplace, which we do, but that's just a Band-Aid. Why do you have it and how do you minimize it going forward, right? How do you get to the root of the problem? And I knew that technology was going to be the way we were going to deliver that solution. Now, the challenge is we're selling technology, software, and tools in a marketplace to one of the most tech-averse industries in the world, the fashion industry, which still does things the way my great-grandfather did business in the 1890s, right? Good old pen and paper, maybe Excel spreadsheet. And so that became a bit of a challenge, but also, again, an opportunity. How do we build a solution that is quick, and easy and automates everything for them to help them solve these challenges. And that's what we've spent a lot of time building. We do leverage fun tools like blockchain and machine learning to help cull that data, make meaning out of it, make predictions to do better, and ultimately understand the sustainability and business impacts that they're having by the good actions they're taking.
Stephanie, do you have a good practical example which kind of could illustrate what you were just talking about?
Yeah, of course. So without using a real customer, but let's just say you're H&M. And, they historically, like any business from fast fashion to luxury, had a challenge in unused inventory. And in 2018, there was an article, big article written in the New York Times about them burning $4.3 billion worth of unsold inventory. And the beauty of it is they have made incredible strides and done wonderful work in sustainability ever since. So I don't call them out as a scapegoat, but as an example of how they've done better. And the reason they had all this waste was because of poor inventory management. They just didn't know, and changing consumer demands. So the way that we would work with a company like that, and we do work from fast fashion to luxury haute couture, is we go to the big brand or retailer and we ask them about what they think they have in waste. And usually it ends up being about 10 times more than they think they have in waste. But at least understand what they think they have and how they're currently managing that information. And once we know that, we're able to help them then figure out, well, what if you could manage it better? And what if you could monetize what you're currently sitting on? And so that's where we will onboard their unused inventory quickly and easily through some cool tools we built. We will match it and sell it and take care of the logistics to buyers around the world. And then now that we know what they have in waste and what they're selling, we can help them do better going forward. And they'll get some pretty cool reports through us, things like the amount of water, the toxins, the energy, and the dollars saved by buying and selling this. And to date, we've saved well over 1 billion gallons of water, and we're just getting started and built a buyer community of over 235,000 users. So I think the demand is there, the opportunity is there, and big brands and retailers are recognizing it.
So obviously that's a no-brainer for any business, right? Because it's all about the dollar. But is it really only about the dollar? What's your sense?
Yeah, we do lead with the profitability because they're big businesses. They have stakeholders to answer to, like we do. I'm very much for profit with a strong social mission. We do have a non-for-profit arm as well. But I think that it almost to them, as long as you can make a business model that makes economic sense, if it also does good for people and planet, then it's a win-win-win. To your point, how do you say no to that? And I do think that there are great brands and retailers doing good things. They just haven't been talking about it because they didn't have the information and they were afraid if they said something wrong, it would be a real problem, right? But now with tools like ours, but other solutions that are out there, they can report and know what they're reporting has integrity to that information and not be afraid to talk about the good acts that they're doing. And then that helps everyone do better. And it not only improves their bottom line, but also their top line. Some of our enterprise customers have actually seen 3 times the conversion rate in their online direct-to-consumer business just by talking about leveraging Deadstock and the sustainability work they're doing. Those are powerful numbers. And whatever the reason, if it incentivizes them to do better and do more with less and do good, that is a move in the right direction, right? Yeah.
So not just in retail and reclaiming old fabrics, but you're also a software developer basically as well. Is that your background?
No. So interestingly enough, aside from my family background in this industry, I was a corporate attorney on Wall Street. Of course, I ended up representing fashion, technology, and sustainability startups and companies. So I guess we get back to our roots and who we are. You can't really run away from it. But very much, when the market crashed in 2008 and 2009 on Wall Street, similar to what we're going through now, it was this period of darkness, right? And waste and greed and excess. And I took that as my opportunity to get back to my roots and go out and build a business to change the world. And I had a prior startup to Queen of Raw, and that's where I saw firsthand a lot of this waste and excess. And that became the bigger problem that I just had to go out and solve and go build that Alibaba and Amazon done right.
So how does blockchain fit in? When you say cool tools like blockchain, how does that fit in? What is special about it?
You know, so when I knew I needed to the point of technology, a strong technical co-founder, I went to General Assembly in New York, which is a great technology hub. And I saw an advertisement on a posting and something about it really resonated with me. And this was years ago. And we met at a Starbucks. We started mapping out on a napkin what the solution would look like. And we knew we were going to start with this marketplace, but that there was some software play here to be able to do better at the root of the cause and help these businesses get more efficient going forward. And so my co-founder and CTO, Phil, and I have been working together ever since that Starbucks meeting. And with blockchain in particular, when it comes to the data that we're capturing as these goods move through their supply chains, you got to know what it's made of, where it came from, what sustainability and testing certifications are ascribed to that fabric and that product, where it goes to. Knowing that is what helps us solve the problem and understand why they have the waste and then how we can sell it. And blockchain is that B word, like the S word, sustainability, right? It means a lot of things to a lot of people, but at the end of the day for supply chain, it's just about integrity to the data, right? And knowing who said what when, and we're not taking physical possession of the goods. We're actually mapping it to buyers located where it sits. So that was very important to us to be able to stand behind what we were offering and build trust and quality and curation to our community. And blockchain does it. And I think it's a very exciting technology that we're just at the beginning of seeing what its power can be in the future for supply chains.
Yeah, no doubt. And do you see this technology being applied? I mean, the fabric industry, fashion industry is so huge. And there's so many other industries where obviously there's a lot of waste as well. Do you see yourself as a model for other industries?
Without question. When we said we want to build Amazon or Alibaba done right, fashion and textile, it's a massive problem. Don't get me wrong. By some accounts, right, the second biggest polluter in the world and the biggest consumer of textiles. So it's a great place to start. It's where we had some background in, obviously, an experience, but it's just the beginning. Because textiles get used, obviously, by automotive, aviation, computer electronics, you name it. And then beyond those industries with textiles, what are the raw material categories for them that have value in their waste that we could monetize and sell and keep in circulation? So that is definitely where we're going and why we wanted this to be a queen of raw for raw materials and take it across categories in the future.
So cool.
Yeah, that's great.
How would a shopper be able to identify that the shirt or the jacket they're buying is sustainable? How would that happen?
So, you know, a lot of work is being done on the top down, right? Which is great from all of these big fashion brands and retailers. But it also takes a critical movement from the bottom up. And that's where we're so excited that millennials and Gen Zs are purchasing with their dollars and care so much about sustainability and are standing behind this. But you're right. How do you know at point of sale, at point of purchase? So we have some technology where now we can actually connect the journey and the story of Queen of Raw Deadstock to the QR code or RFID thread in a finished good. So at point of purchase, you as a consumer can quickly scan the label and immediately on your phone know it's Deadstock, came from here, went here, and you just saved this amount of water, toxins, and energy by this purchase. And that's important too because the end consumer needs to feel a part of it, and that they're engaged and that they're contributing to this greater movement. It's also valuable because it's obviously helpful to the brand, right? Where they get to share their story and obviously improve in their top line sales while also doing good acts. And so, you know, very excited to see obviously where this goes. There are some very cool companies too, like Good On You, where if you're not sure about the sustainability of a brand, you can actually just go to this website and put in the name of the brand and at least get a high level scorecard and understanding of how good they're doing. And people are making those kind of decisions every day. And I think we are at a point where we can change the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds great because it kind of changes consumerism in a way. Now, this is sort of a level of transparency there where I as a consumer can make a decision. Oh, yeah, great. This is what I buy. Yeah, or nope, sorry. This is a no-go. This doesn't align to my beliefs or my attitude or whatever you want to call it. right?
Without question. And but you didn't always have that information at your fingertips. Now, thanks to blockchain and other tools, you do, and you know it. Before, you had to read a label, and maybe if the label had some crazy words on it you didn't know, then you knew it, you didn't want to touch your body with it. But now you can actually know not just that it's 100% organic cotton, but that it was rescued from here and recycled from here and it passed, right? That's so exciting. I mean, we can go as far as all the way up the chain to, you know, literally the farmer who sheared the sheep. And knowing that kind of end to end ultimately is powerful for businesses and for consumers. But that being said, I don't expect everyone to get there overnight. So it's really awesome when like companies like, right, Zara say we're going to be 100% sustainable by 2025. That's great. They put a stake in the ground as to what they care about and where they're going. Even if they only get 1% of the way there, though, that's still a movement in the right direction and massively powerful. I mean, as damaging as fashion is, right, to the our world's water, it also has the power to solve the world's water crisis with these acts, and we can.
Do you map all the way back to the farmer, basically?
So we are not yet. We can, but my thought was, and we are very focused on the waste, and so many companies like Zara and others want to go end to end. But where do you start today? And you make that bold of a promise, and you almost get stuck in the mud because you don't know where to go or what to do to even start on day one. When you look at your waste, it's something you're sitting on today that has value, that can help you survive today and by selling it and making money. And then you can put that money into doing other good acts in your supply chain, like, right, understanding more all the way up to the farmer who sheared the sheep and do better and thrive tomorrow. But starting with the waste, to me, is the place to be more sustainable and to start digitizing parts of the supply chain and then grow up and down from there. And that's why I get really excited about that, this being a place where businesses can start and not get stuck.
What's can you explain the water savings side of this? I'm not sure people understand, or I would love my own understanding about how water plays into fabric making and what is the relationship there?
You're right. A lot of people don't realize that fashion, by some accounts, is the second biggest polluter in the world of clean water globally. And it sits behind oil and agriculture, which is the number one polluter, but which it also uses and contributes to. So massively damaging. To put it into a little more personal perspective, although I don't like to get too much in the scary statistics, but one t-shirt takes 700 gallons of water to produce, and another 700 gallons of water to wash it in its lifetime. That's one shirt. 2 billion shirts are sold around the world every single year. So if we continue at the current pace of textile production, by 2025, 2/3 of the entire world's population will face shortages of fresh water and be exposed to hazardous chemicals from textile production alone. So we're not talking about 100 years from now, right? We're not talking about 50 years from now. We're talking about today and on our shores. And that's what drives me and what I think about. I want my kids to have clean water to drink, right? Clothes that aren't toxic to wear, a planet to live on. And that's how we need to be thinking about the actions we take and how we can contribute. That means small actions. One less t-shirt that we purchase. You've just saved 700 gallons of water. That's enough clean water for a person to drink for 3 years. So massive impact by one less shirt a year.
Startling statistics. What about the toxin side? Do you have similar statistics for that?
So the toxin side, one average t-shirt takes 1/3 of a pound of chemicals. So it is a lot of chemicals. Now, it's less easy to quantify than water to describe here because different fibers use a varying amount of different, right, chemicals. And there's obviously both the chemicals that go into producing the textile, but there's also the chemicals that go into the agriculture and the farming and the different. So a much deeper study begs a longer conversation, but also around 1/3 of a pound per t-shirt. So all that bad stuff. on the flip side, an organic shirt takes 10 gallons of water, most of which is natural rainwater, and 0 chemicals.
That's huge. Like, buy organic is a huge difference in terms of impact.
It is, but it also costs a lot more because, you know, and so that's why for some people at point of purchase and right in point of sale, they don't all switch immediately to organic cotton unless they know their consumers are willing to pay for it. That's why, you know, working with reused dead stock, we can sell 100% organic cotton, which we do, and you can get it at up to 80% off wholesale prices, and then it becomes more affordable, especially for some other brands to use it.
So organic cotton would also be in the landfill?
Yeah, Unbelievable, right?
Unbelievable.
The quality we have, most people thought when I started this business, it was scraps off a cutting room floor. We have some of our SKUs, 115,000 yards and more of one type of fabric in mint condition on rolls, first rate, going to be burned or landfilled. So one person's waste, another person's real gold, right? I mean, that is value. But they didn't have a medium or a market or a platform to sell it before. Well, now they do, so no more excuses.
Okay, so maybe I have maybe a bit of a devil's advocate question here, Stephanie. You said you focus on the waste part, which I completely understand. It really makes sense, especially what we just talked about, the organic cotton bits, you know, and all the waste and the toxins and incredible numbers. So for a business, however, it would probably reduce, when we go to the beginning of the circle, the actual production side of it. So does it actually make sense?
Yeah, no. So I think if I'm hearing you right, the question, which we do get a lot, is if you have this marketplace to sell waste, are you incentivizing businesses to continue to make the waste because they know they have an outlet for it? And it's a great question. Two parts to that. One is, these businesses, even with what they're going through today, they're in the business of making things. And automatically, by making things, you almost always will have some form of waste by inherent nature of a making of an anything. And so I do believe that, at least for a long time, fortunately or unfortunately, there will be waste. But what we can do is track behavior month over month and year over year for particular suppliers. So I actually can tell you if this supplier has curbed its behavior, has improved, or if they're getting worse, right? And they can know that too and start to do better in their practices. And that's where you're right. We want to ultimately see the rate of textile production go down. And I ultimately hope to be jobless and write myself out of a business because the marketplace is no more, because everyone is more efficient with their supply chains. We got a long way to get there, but we'll keep on pushing until we do.
Yeah, maybe your kids.
Yeah, exactly. The princes of raw over here.
The princes of raw. I love that. Where would I go to buy a reclaimed organic cotton shirt?
Yeah, well, so right now, and that's the thing, it's been hard for people to find what they want and to know that it is just that, reclaimed organic cotton. There have been claims, and a lot of people talk about the greenwashing that goes on in this industry and people making claims that things are organic when they're not. Mistakes by enterprise corporations, it happens for them. What we hope to do with the technology and tools we've built is help them not make those mistakes and not be greenwashing anymore and to know what they're saying is true. Organic cotton should have some organic certifications ascribed to it. And with our platform, when something is identified as such, we can actually post to the record and the story in the blockchain that certification. And it carries with it for the life of that digital SKU, that information. And that's some of the way we're able to protect and know the sayings of what something is. Because you're right, historically, you didn't always know what you're getting. But now this has become such a movement and so powerful around recycle, reuse, repurpose, and dead stock that I think that since the demand is there, the businesses are only going to get smarter and better about delivering on it.
Do you do also leather?
So we do work with leather, and I get a lot of challenges in the sustainability community because everything, we take a very broad view of sustainability. Everything on our platform is dead stock in that it has been rescued from being burned or landfilled. It currently exists and it was going to be destroyed otherwise, and we're giving it a second life. But in that, we definitely have quote unquote unsustainable materials. We have leathers and exotics and skins. To me, being able to rescue it and reuse it since it already existed as opposed to wasting, burning, and landfilling, there is a value that I can quantify in that I believe in. Now, we definitely have people who do not want leather and exotics and skins and thinks that perpetuates the problem, people use it. That's fine. Then it's not for you and you definitely don't have to buy it from us. But that was kind of the stake in the ground that we put of what it meant to us. But for lack of a better word, we do have a section of our catalog called sustainable for anything that in addition to being dead stock has some certification or quality to it beyond just that. And that's where those kinds of individuals can go to find what they want.
So Stephanie, where do you see the future of your company and where do you see obviously this is a ripe, robust entrepreneurial venture, and I imagine there's going to be more and more people in this space of supply chain you know, measurement, documentation, validation. Do you see a future for, you know, do you see it all kind of naturally playing out as a optimistic's vision, or do you see it as a fight going forward?
I very much am an optimist, but part of the definition of being an entrepreneur is there is a fight in there, right? I mean, if it was easy, no challenges, everyone be doing it. So that is part of what we do every day, is work through the challenges and keep on pushing through. We were fortunate to be first to market globally with this, seeing this issue and building this kind of a solution. I bet there will definitely be competition, and there already is starting to be, trying to come in. That to me only solidifies the value of this solution, right? That there is a huge market with a huge need, and we can all be a part of the solution and get a piece of the pie. But inevitably right now we are growing and scaling. We raised a round during COVID, off to the races to execute and deliver on that. And then we'll raise the next big round and keep on pushing. That is the goal.
Are you public or you, this is private?
No, we're a privately owned company.
Yeah. And that's actually my next question to you. It's like, why? Or what's the advantage for you being a private company?
I get asked all the time why we aren't a non-for-profit. And I really value and respect that question. I looked at the kind of solution we were delivering and what we wanted to do. And to me, being a non-for-profit, I would not be able to accomplish the goals I want. Building a technology solution that I'm selling to massive enterprise customers to change a huge industry. And there's a hell of a lot more good I can do with a lot of dollars to continue to fuel my solution to do better for people and planet and profit, but also then pledge a portion of our proceeds, which we do, to our non-for-profit partners while giving them access to our software and technology in our marketplace. So everybody wins at that point. So very important to me to be for-profit with a social mission. It takes a lot of dollars and a lot of work to build a competitor to an Amazon or an Alibaba, but I think it is the future, and we're going big.
Right. What does your nonprofit arm do?
It's called Wildlife Friendly Enterprise Network. It's with Aveda Caring and Stella McCartney. They do incredible work in Africa with a lot of the women NGOs in Africa, where they make beautiful artisanal fabrics and beadwork. We give them a marketplace for free to sell and make money on this beautiful dead stock and give them access to US markets and new customers. And then, of course, we also pledge a portion of our proceeds back to support them in the work they do. And those are the kinds of partnerships that fuel us and fuel them, hopefully, as well. So it's mutually beneficial.
Cool. All right. Is there any question that we haven't asked that you'd like us to like ask? Or,
you know, I guess going back a little bit, one little thing that I will end on in terms of what drives me every day. I am doing what I'm doing for my children. And for anyone who thinks you can't go solve these challenges and that we can't turn back time and fix the climate crisis, I think about my kids. And one day pre-COVID in New York City, I was pushing my son around the streets in a stroller. And I hear something coming out of the stroller over the noise of the streets. And I lean in and I hear my 3.5-year-old son saying, "Are you naked right now? You're not, because you're using fabric and it's polluting your water." He was doing my 60-second pitch. And I said, well, one, that probably means I've done this pitch a few too many times, pushing the stroller, practicing. But on the other hand, it also means if my 3.5-year-old can get it, anyone in the world can get it, and we're going to solve these challenges. So that's my inspiration to keep on going.
Bravo, bravo.
Wonderful. What a really nice story Stephanie brings to the table with about her grandpa, who comes, I guess, from Italy in the 1890s to America to build a business to fulfill the American dream. What else could it be?
Yeah, it's cool.
Through waste. Actually, you know, as she said, using waste already, which probably in that mindset wasn't even, you know, a concept.
It was the resourcefulness of scarcity, right? And now she's just doing the same thing in this very high-tech fashion. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, fascinating. Really cool.
So I'm fascinated to know how this will roll out. Like, how do you get it mainstream to have people, consumers, measure and know what are they buying? you know, because it's possible now. And if we could get there, I think consumers would naturally change their behavior, you know, start to buy things that are good for the planet, or at least not bad for the planet.
I don't know. Sometimes I think we were so naive thinking that that would happen.
But don't you think it just comes down to knowledge, like people having the information they need?
I think it comes down to transparency and actually having the information at hand. But I do think we are maybe a little bit naive in thinking that then people would automatically do the right choice, because what exactly is the right choice? And that is another piece of education.
I think there's enough people in the world that if you tell them you could have this shirt or this shirt, this shirt's going to cost you a dollar more, and this one won't hurt the planet, and it will actually be there for your grandchildren, and this shirt is going to help you destroy the planet, and your grandchildren will be inheriting a huge, hairy problem to solve, or if there's a world to solve it. And I think most people will choose... If they know, they'll choose the sustainable alternative.
Now, this is my hope. But quite frankly, it's reality. What we're seeing is that a lot of people actually do that choice. We already have that choice. And a lot of people don't go that way. We already have that choice for decades, actually, to eliminate oil. We still have oil heating in, actually, this house here. He's speechless for the first time.
No, actually, this house went through conversion. We actually went from dirty oil to clean oil, and now clean oil to natural gas. And I have no doubt we'll go from natural gas to thermal or something else over time. I do believe that there's a progression for good going forward. And I think that that's a matter of what the collective consciousness dictates for us.
All I'm saying is that we could have done all these decisions 20 years ago, and 20 years ago, we already were running out of time, and now it's 2020, and we are really running out of time. It's just that we hit this pandemic, and which has shown us, wow, it really doesn't go any further.
I don't know. I would prefer to say that Stephanie saw an opportunity, and I think entrepreneurs see opportunities, and in the last 100 years, the opportunities have been for profitability through growth. And that's kind of been the overarching goal. And now there's opportunities for things like recycling and new efficiencies and new ways of doing business. And she represents that kind of entrepreneur. She's not anywhere about doing it for free or anything like that. She is definitely an opportunist. And I hope we find more of them, more people like that. And I think we will.
It takes a while to wrap your mind around this, that this new type of business, which basically takes the opportunity, and basically what our current economy has created is this huge waste, mm-hmm. which is a huge business, as Stephanie has wonderfully explained and illustrated. And now you're creating a for-profit business to make your company grow in that sector. And I completely understand her decision to do it. It's scale, and you need dollars to basically change anything.
Right. I mean, I think that means you have to have a really great succession plan. Like she said, she wants to put herself out of business. And that was why I asked her the question, well, what do you see? Once you're out of business, what do you see for the future? If it's true, and her objective is to put herself out of business, no longer peddling waste, right? Then what's the next thing is Alibaba sustainable, right? Like creating a platform for retail and trade that is sustainable. And so clearly she has a sophisticated business model that's projecting into a future where she solves one problem and then leverages that into a whole new marketplace.
Yeah, and the reason she couldn't do this by simply having a nonprofit is, I guess, scalability.
Well, you need money. I mean,
money, exactly.
Finding donors
scale
is so hard.
And dollars. Yeah. And you unfortunately need dollars in this world to change laws. However, we talked to Scott, UBI, for example, where maybe you can exit
Maybe.
The monetary Although system I think without
that
the big dollars.
I have a feeling that Scott's UBI limits will not really reach Stephanie's requirements. Anyway, exactly. Fantastic conversation.
We're an independent, listener-supported podcast.
Thanks to our producer, Riley Paul.
Support us by rating this episode and sharing with all your friends.
And to learn more, join us at potofgold.world.
I'm Stephanie Overbach.
And I'm Mel Wymore. Thanks for listening.